6 months old. One fatal mutation in one experimental therapy that had never been tried in a human before. This is not science fiction. This is baby KJ's story. The first person to receive a personalized CRISPR treatment tailored to his unique genetic error, and it may have just changed the future of rare disease medicine forever. Welcome to Curie. I'm Mike, and today we're diving into a story that blends science, urgency, and ethics. How a premature baby with a rare metabolic disorder became the focus of a groundbreaking medical first. A custom-built CRISPR therapy designed, manufactured, and delivered in under 6 months. To understand the magnitude of this achievement, let's rewind to the foundations of gene therapy. The idea of rewriting the human genome is not new. Since the early 90s, scientists have dreamed of using genetic tools to correct inherited disorders. Early technologies like zinc finger nucleases and talons gave us glimpses of what was possible, but they were difficult to design, slow to deploy, and expensive. Then came CRISPR-Cas9, a gene editing tool adapted from bacterial immune systems. Its genius lies in its programmability. You feed it a guide RNA, and it cuts DNA at that precise spot. By 2012, it had transformed the field. But even with such a powerful tool in hand, the road from lab to bedside remained long and winding. And by 2023, CRISPR had reached a historic milestone. The FDA approved Casgevy, a CRISPR-based therapy that effectively cured sickle cell disease in early trials. For the first time, gene editing had been proven to work in humans. But these victories focused on relatively common diseases, those with thousands, even tens of thousands of patients. What about the ultra-rare? What about the child born with a mutation no one has seen before? That brings us to KJ, born prematurely in 2024. KJ seemed healthy at first, but just 2 days after birth, his medical team noticed troubling lab results. Blood ammonia levels were alarmingly high, far beyond safe limits. In neonatology, high ammonia is often a red flag for a urea cycle disorder, a group of rare genetic conditions that prevent the body from processing nitrogen. If untreated, this can lead to lethargy, seizures, coma, and even death. The diagnosis: carbamoyl phosphate synthesis 1 deficiency, CPS1 deficiency, a metabolic condition so rare it affects roughly 1 in 1.3 million births. In this disorder, a mutation in a single gene disables the first enzyme in the urea cycle, halting the body's ability to eliminate nitrogen. The outcome is often fatal in infancy. Standard treatments include strict protein restriction, ammonia scavenger medications, and, if the child survives long enough, liver transplantation. Even then, outcomes are poor. KJ's parents, Aaron and Kyle Muldoon, were devastated, but not without hope. Their case landed at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, where Dr. Rebecca Aarons Nicholas had been working on rare metabolic disorders. She in turn connected with Dr. Kiran Musunuru, a gene editing specialist at the University of Pennsylvania. As it happened, they had recently begun collaborating on potential CRISPR applications for urea cycle disorders. That coincidence became the spark that launched a race against time. Step one was sequencing KJ's genome. Using rapid whole exome sequencing, the team identified a single point mutation in the CPS1 gene, an A2G substitution that rendered the enzyme dysfunctional. This mutation was rare, but not unique. A few cases had been reported in the literature. Still, it had never been targeted with gene editing. The team had to answer two critical questions. Can we fix this, and can we fix it fast enough? This is where the technology shines. Rather than using traditional CRISPR-Cas9, which cuts DNA, the team opted for base editing, a refined technique developed by Dr. David Liu's lab. Unlike earlier tools, base editors don't create double-strand breaks. Instead, they chemically modify one DNA base into another. In KJ's case, they needed to convert a G back into an A, a perfect match for adenine base editing. Base editors offer a critical advantage, fewer off-tangled effects, and no need to rely on the cell's error-prone DNA repair machinery. But even with the right tool in hand, how do you deliver it? The answer came in the form of lipid nanoparticles, or LNPs, the same delivery system used in mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. These microscopic fat bubbles can carry messenger RNA and guide RNA into liver cells, instructing them to make the editing protein just long enough to make the fix. Unlike viral vectors, which can integrate into the genome and carry long-term risks, LNPs are transient, making them a safer option for infants. Designing, the editor was a complex, multidisciplinary effort. Scientists at the Innovative Genomics Institute, founded by Jennifer Doudna, synthesized the editor's components and ran tests on KJ's own cells. Partners like Aldevron and IDT produced high-quality reagents under tight deadlines. Meanwhile, teams at Penn and CHOP coordinated the regulatory process, eventually submitting a single patient investigational new drug application to the FDA. It was approved in record time, just 1 week. By February 2025, KJ received his first dose, a low dose intended to test safety and begin therapeutic correction. A second higher dose followed in March and a third in April. The protocol was cautious, carefully titrated to balance efficacy and risk. The team monitored KJ's ammonia levels, liver function, and immune response in real time. What they saw was astonishing. KJ began tolerating more dietary protein. His need for nitrogen scavenging drugs diminished. He weathered two infections that would have likely been life-threatening before treatment. Liver biopsies showed that the editing had worked. His hepatocytes were producing functional CPS1 enzyme. Most importantly, there were no serious side effects, no immune reaction, no signs of liver toxicity. It was not just a clinical win. It was a scientific and logistical marvel. What does this mean for the future of medicine? For one, it proves that personalized gene therapy can be built in months, not years. That CRISPR tools developed for common diseases can be rapidly adapted for ultra-rare conditions. And that regulatory bodies like the FDA are willing to move fast when lives are on the line. But the model raises big questions. How scalable is this approach? Right now, KJ's treatment was custom-built at an estimated cost of million. Who pays for future cases? What happens when a family without elite medical connections faces a similar crisis? There are also ethical concerns. KJ was an infant, unable to consent. His parents faced an agonizing decision with limited data. How do we ensure informed consent, transparency, and long-term monitoring in similar cases? What if edits go wrong? And how do we prevent the emergence of genetic privilege where only the wealthy or well-connected can access curative treatments? Still, the implications are extraordinary. For pediatricians, neonatologists, geneticists, and primary care physicians, this story is more than a miracle, it's a signpost. Newborn screening could soon evolve from identification to intervention. Rare disease clinics may need to build gene therapy capabilities, and families once told, "There's nothing we can do," may hear a very different message. One child, one mutation, one custom-built therapy. If this model proves viable, the world of rare disease treatment, and indeed medicine itself, may never be the same. As CRISPR tools improve and delivery systems become safer and cheaper, we may reach a point where genetic disease is not just managed, but reversed. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mike, and this is Curie. And here's the question I'll leave you with. If personalized genetic medicine is here, how do we ensure it reaches beyond the fortunate few and becomes a standard, not an exception?